Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Orange and Brown Talk podcast here on a Wednesday. Dan Lobby, Mary Kay Cabot, Ashley Bastock. And we are going to use today to take a look back at the draft and really kind of do something we haven't done to this point. We got into it a little bit post-draft, but for the most part, we haven't really dug into these draft picks the Browns made. So we're going to go through pick by pick and talk about each pick, maybe why we think they made it, whatever we think of the pick, where we think they might fit, all of that. We're going to start at the top and work through all the picks the Browns made. It's convenient because they didn't make like 10 picks this year. They just kind of stayed put and made the picks that they had. So let's just start at the top. Pick number 54, second round, Mike Hall Jr., 6'3", 290 pounds out of Ohio State. And of course, a Northeast Ohio native, went to Benedictine High School, played football at Streetsboro High School as well after his family moved to Streetsboro. You know, just one of those great local feel-good stories, Mary Kay, but also a guy that really seems like a good fit for Jim Schwartz in this scheme.
Yeah, I think the common denominator about the guys that they drafted this year is that they were so very scheme-specific to the coordinators and what they really wanted. And when you're looking at Jim Schwartz's defense and now the addition of the new defensive line coach, Jacques Césaire, these guys really needed or felt like they needed another pass rushing three technique, not just a regular old defensive tackle nose, whatever. This is a pass rushing three tech. And that's what they saw in Mike Hall. And that's what they expect him to do. Now, will he crack the lineup right away? Hard to say, because Quentin Jefferson is also a three technique. And we talked about this before. He had six sacks, I believe, last year. And he has a vast amount of experience at this role. And usually it takes a rookie a little time to acclimate to the pro game. Now, he obviously played at a very big program. DeJuan Jones didn't have a whole lot of trouble transitioning to the starting role when he got thrown into the fire. But Mike Hall is joining a very, very veteran lineup of defensive linemen. And he's going to have to be able to pull his weight whenever he's in there. He's got to know the assignments. He's got to know the scheme inside and out. He's really got to be ready. And remember, he's only 20 years old right now. He'll be 21 in June. And so it might take him a little while to get up the learning curve. But if you can bring the rabid explosiveness that they're looking for, you're going to get on the field sooner than later.
So Mike Hall, Dane Brugler's fifth ranked defensive tackle in his Beast Guide, a guy who projected to go in the second or third round. He's 20 years old, so still a really young guy. He's going to turn 21 in June. So, you know, kind of fits a lot of the things that Andrew Berry likes. And Ashley, you know, it's interesting. You know, we were both kind of asking about this, different people over draft weekend, about how expensive this position's getting and the things that are being valued at this position. And, you know, then it turns out shortly after the draft, we see the Patriots go out and give Christian Wilkins a really big extension. So I'm sorry, Christian Wilkins paid the Patriots, extended their defensive tackle, but Christian Wilkins was kind of the leader when he signed with the Raiders of guys who got paid a bunch of money. Dalvin Tomlinson got paid a bunch of money. So this pick becomes really important just for the value of what it is. especially if this guy can be a really good defensive tackle for this team over the life of that rookie deal.
Yeah, I think ultimately this was a big part of the reason on when it came to Thursday night, what we were talking about, what we wanted to see the Browns do, or maybe what we thought they would do, what we hoped they would do. I stuck to this idea of I hope they take a D tackle, because they didn't wade into that market when the contracts got kind of crazy. I mean, Christian Wilkins is the best example. Chris Jones, his contract he got with Kansas City, Justin Matabike with the Ravens. I mean, you see it all across the league. There is a premium on interior guys who can rush the passer. And I think it's a trend we've seen in the making the last couple of years. And these guys are going to get more expensive because they help the really good edge rushers so much. And right now, the market is pricing them really, really high. And we've talked about this before, too, that Andrew Berry is typically good at finding ways around the market or staying ahead of the market. And drafting a guy who's going to fit that role is obviously a really good alternative if you hit on him, because they will be so much cheaper on that rookie deal than the four-year, $95 million contract type of deals that we're seeing with these veterans. So I was all for it. There were a handful of guys I liked. Michael Hall was one of them. I know he was one the Browns liked too. And, you know, the 1.5 sacks last year, 4.5 in 2022, but that pass rush win rate number, which we've talked about, Dane Brugler cited in his Beast draft guide, he ranked, I have it pulled up here if I can find the right number. Wasn't it like 18.3%,
yes.
Dan?
Second,
Mary
yes.
Kay. Why do I never just ask Mary Kay?
Dan remembers that one too. But yes, 18.3, second in the FBS only to Byron Murphy of Texas.
Who was another guy, right?
Yes.
That was who they liked.
He went number 18 overall. He was one of three guys that they had on their radar because of the pass rush skill set. And the other one was Johnny Newton.
Yeah. So I'm fascinated by that element of his game, even though it didn't materialize in the sack numbers. And we know how the Browns feel about that. We know our disagreements with it. But I do think he has the potential, if they hit on him and they end up being right about him, to be a bargain for them.
Yeah. And the name I was trying to come up with earlier was Christian Barmore, who signed a massive extension with New England right after the draft. It's the largest non-Tom Brady contract in Patriots franchise history. Yeah, 4 years, $92 million for $41.8 in guaranteed money. So this position is getting just more and more valuable. And so the more that you can kind of control it a little bit and control that cost a little bit, and everybody kept saying pass rush, pass rush, pass rush when we were talking about these defensive tackles. So Mary Kay, you know, you touched on this a little bit, you know, with Quentin Jefferson in the mix, it does kind of muck things up, but we know that Jim Schwartz sort of views this as like a hockey line almost. He'll put four new guys out there in the middle of a drive even. And, you know, he'll work to keep guys fresh. We'll see drives when sometimes Miles will only go on third downs or he won't be on the field at all. He really values that ability to keep guys fresh. So I do feel like if Mike Hall shows this team that he's ready, he's going to get some work pretty early on.
I think so, too. I have to wonder a little bit about who the odd man out is going to be, because there probably is going to be one. Again, we've talked about the fact that they have now a number of three techniques. They've got Quentin Jefferson. They've got Shelby Harris, who can play nose and three. They've got Maurice Hurst, who is a three technique. And now they have Michael Hall. And of course, Dalvin, Siaki, those are your nose tackles. And then Shelby can fill in over there. So if they're going to be moving these guys around, that's great. But I still think somebody's going to be left without a chair. And I don't know how that's going to work out. You have to wonder, you know, is Maurice Hurst going to be able to make the team under these conditions? I know they really like him a lot. Maybe they keep an extra defensive lineman and they give Mike Hall the time he needs to develop. So something to keep an eye on. Who's going to make it out of this group? And does somebody not make it?
All right, let's move to the other side of the line and this next pick in the draft. And that is number 85 overall, Zach Zinter, 6'6", 309 pounds. out of Michigan. He is a guard. Of course, he's coming off an injury that he suffered against Ohio State when Mike Hall was pushed into that leg. He appears to be back. He appears to be ready to go in the spring. So that is obviously good news. Ashley, I want to start with you because like you covered Michigan, you covered Jim Harbaugh, and just the way they play the game is so different than a lot of other college teams. I mean, it is old school. You know, I actually asked Zach about this at his press conference that second half against Penn State when they just decided, you know what, we're just going to run the ball. I mean, they have a guy that went top. What, did he go top 10? I don't, wherever he went in the draft, first round pick at quarterback, JJ McCarthy. And they just decide they're going to run the ball over and over again against Penn State to finish off that game. I like the idea of reaching into Michigan and bringing in an interior offensive lineman who kind of has that mentality. So we're probably not going to see him much this year, but what did you think of this pick?
Yeah, I was a little surprised by how high Zach Zinner went, which we talked about that over the weekend, right? I think this was a case where the Browns really liked him. I think he has the chance to be a really good NFL player, but coming off that injury, obviously, I assumed he might be more a day three pick, but since the Browns didn't have a fourth round pick, and if they really liked him, you kind of have to chase that guy on night two and just go after what you want instead of taking a chance and hoping that no one else picks him up because they're afraid of the injury. But yeah, I'm really fascinated to see what he can do at the NFL level. So I remember when they recruited him, and I just think over these last 4 years at Michigan, he's been working his way up. I mean, last year, widely regarded as the best lineman on the team, the leader of that unit. That's before the injury, obviously. I mean, first team all Big Ten conference the year prior as well. He was honorable mention as a sophomore. I think that offensive line at Michigan can typically be kind of hard to break your way in, particularly as an upper or an underclassman, I should say. And I think these guys do kind of surprise when they get to the NFL. Like, it sounds maybe kind of silly to say, but I remember watching John Runyon Jr. in college and being like, he's, I don't know how much he's going to do when he gets to the Packers. And he's played pretty well the last few years. So I do think they have a good standard there. The program really values offensive linemen. They remind me of the Browns in that way, the way they go after and try to recruit these guys. And I do think how cerebral he is going to be key at this next level, especially because we know he's not, barring injury to somebody else, doesn't seem destined for a ton of snaps earlier in his career. So I think what he's done so far, what he had to do in college, he'll do a good job of maximizing practice reps and being active in his own development, I think.
Mary Kev, I think this pick is interesting on a lot of levels. We've talked about this, you know, could this be your Joel Bitonio replacement or a Wyatt Teller replacement? You know, we talk about Bitonio because he's getting older. You know, Teller's under contract for two more years. They both are. And, you know, part of me wants to almost pump the brakes on that and say, I don't know. I mean, is a third round pick really going to step in and replace those guys? But when you look at just everything about this pick, the fact that sort of what Ashley touched on, that maybe this was a little bit high for Zach Zinner, but the Browns obviously valued him enough to take him here and not risk, you know, having to maybe move into the fourth to get him and lose out on him. And he's 23 years old. He just turned 23, which, you know, that's not an older draft pick, but that's not exactly the age range this team usually targets, especially for developmental guys. This really feels like a player the Browns targeted specifically with a specific reason in mind. So that's why I think talking about him as a future replacement for one of those two guards isn't crazy. I think there's a real plan in mind here to use a third round pick on a player like this.
Well, I think it's pretty evident that Joel Bitonio is coming to the end of his career, and he could stick around for one more year after this, two more years. You never really know. But even if Zach Zinner had to sit for two seasons, that goes lightning quick. We've all seen how fast that can go. And even though he is a little bit older than some of the guys that they normally draft, you get to keep your offensive lineman longer than that. So I still think that he will be a decade-long starting offensive guard for this team if he pans out the way they believe he will. And I think that they feel very strongly that he will be able to do that. And then another reason where he might have actually gone a little bit higher had he come out maybe even last year, number one, because of the injury, and then number two, because of the fact that this was a very strong offensive tackle class. And the guards may have gotten a little hurt by that because the tackles were the marquee position here. They usually are, but this was just an exceptionally good offensive tackle class. So he might have gone even a little bit higher. He could have been a late second rounder had not there been so many really, really good tackles. So I think that he was just a good, solid pick. And the old adage in personnel circles is when in doubt, take alignment, because you're going to use those big guys. You're going to use them. And if they hit, then you're going to have them in many cases, especially on the offensive line, for a long time. And as we've discussed before, a number of players flew off the board just as the Browns were getting ready to decide what they wanted to do. They had another chance to trade down, just like they did as they were approaching the Mike Hall pick. They had a chance to trade that down. They had a chance to trade this one down. They had good chances to do that. And they could have picked up that number four. But they decided, let's stay put and take two good linemen that we are pretty confident are going to play a lot of football for us. And in terms of the Zach pick, some of the ones, and I think I've mentioned them before, that they did have on their radar were Cooper Beebe, a guard that went number 73, Kieran Amagadeji, who went number 75, the offensive tackle out of Yale, a guard, Delmar Glaze out of Maryland, number 77, and then wide receiver Jermaine Burton. I'm going to be very interested about that one. I'm going to be very interested to see what Jermaine Burton does for the Bengals. They're good at drafting receivers, really good at it. And Alabama receivers generally, of course, are very good. The Browns are banking on that in terms of Jerry Jeudy living up to his potential this year. So those are some of the things that kind of went on with this pick. But if all goes as planned, Zach Zinter will be a starting Cleveland Browns guard potentially for a decade.
And there's precedent here. It hasn't necessarily worked out maybe the way they planned, but you go back to when they draft Nick Harris in the fifth round. And he sits for 2 years behind J.C. Treader. And the Browns finally, you know, gets to the point where J.C.'s too expensive and they move on. And that was going to be Nick's job until he got hurt. And obviously things changed for him dramatically. He's with Seattle now and Ethan Posick is the starting center here. I think DeJuan Jones maybe fits into this bucket a little bit. A guy you drafted in the fourth round who was really talented. And maybe you saw him ultimately as a replacement for Jack Conklin in a few years. Or if Jed Wills didn't work out, a replacement for Jed Wills. Now, obviously, that timeline got accelerated when Conklin got hurt, and he could be a starter again this year. We'll see. So it's not unheard of for this team to do something like this, to just draft a guy and sit him for a year or two. They're very patient with their draft picks anyway, and basically set up that succession plan. And I think in different forms, Ashley, we've seen them do that on this offensive line before.
Yeah, you laid out those scenarios that I thought of as well when they made this pick. I just think their offensive line now has been together for a few years, right? It's pretty rare how they've managed to keep, I think, this unit together, and they've gotten to grow up together in some cases. And they were lucky to have Bill Callahan here when they had him to help kind of mold that. And they've done it, you know, to varying degrees of success. Like, I don't think that it was a failure to draft Nick Harris just because you had to move on from him. That obviously ended up being a freak thing with his injury. And then they got lucky again when they were able to get Ethan Posick on the cheap, and he was, you know, just going to be an insurance policy. And then all of a sudden he's playing some of the best football of his career a couple of seasons ago. So I think, especially with what this team went through at the tackle position last year, that isn't exclusive to tackle. That could happen at any position. And I don't think it can hurt if you have somebody you feel strongly about that can fit in your system, that can learn your system, can jump in if needed, but you have time to develop him. why not take him? Like Mary Kay said, I love that adage from the personnel circles about if you're in doubt, just take a lineman and add some depth there and try to mold him.
And one more thing, too, that's going to help Zach Zinter, too, is, and this was something that happened with Nick Harris, J.C. Treader never practiced for about 2 years. He never practiced. And he took days off in training camp. And, you know, he missed time in training camp. And so Nick was getting all these first-team reps. So even though he wasn't playing, he was getting all these first-team reps. And, you know, at some point, Zach Zinter, whether it's right away or, you know, early in camp, he's probably going to end up second on the depth chart somewhere at one of those guard spots. And Joel's going to miss practices. He's going to take Wednesdays off. He's going to have times when he's not on the field during training camp. So those are going to be opportunities for Zach to work with the first team. And that's going to help with his development, even if he's not getting on the field. So again, there's a precedent here for the Browns doing this, and we'll see if it works out here. So let's move on to when they did pick a receiver at number 156, Jamari Thrash, 6 foot, 188 pounds, finished his career at Louisville, started his career at Georgia State. Mary Kay, pretty fast guy, a 4.46 40, a 154 10-yard split. He had 1,122 yards one of his seasons at Georgia State. Last season, got off to a good start, and then he broke his hand. And he even said when we had our conference call with him that he was basically out there catching with one hand for a lot of the second half of that season. But you know, it always tells me something. When a guy goes out there, whether it's Jamari Thrash or Marvin Harrison Jr., when a guy is hurt and he goes out there and he keeps playing and he fights through things. And, you know, I know Jamari, it was a little more urgent than it was for Marvin Harrison Jr. Harrison would have gone top five no matter what. But it always tells me something about a guy when he does that. So this is an interesting pick. I'm not 100% sold on it, but I can see why he's so intriguing to this football team.
Once you get to the fifth round, you're looking for something unique about a player or a skill set or a trait that you really need. Instead of just picking a player because of the overall ranking, sometimes you go and find somebody who can do something that you're really going to need him to do. And as we've talked about, Ken Dorsey is going to be running more of these choice routes, and he's the perfect fit for that. So that's why he's on this football team. It's basically a Ken Dorsey thing. Not that Ken said, oh, you got to go pick this guy, but he probably laid out the profile of what he was looking for. And then they went out and found the kinds of guys that could do that. And the one that they liked the best for this role was Ladd McConkey from Georgia, but he went really high. And there was a chance that they would have taken him at 54 had he been there. And you just never know how these things are going to work out. You have no idea. A guy can go anywhere from, I think Ladd went 34. You can go anywhere from 34 to 64 in some cases. There's sometimes no rhyme or reason to it, but he just so happened to go nice and high. And so obviously the Browns had to move off that position. And then you get to the fifth round and you find somebody there who has a similar skill set. And that is what the case is with Jamari Thrash. He can do these kinds of things. He doesn't necessarily have any one thing that you just say, wow, that is his incredible, absolute superpower. If there was something, it would be his ability to separate. But other than that, it's not like blazing super speed or amazing height or amazing route running, but it's really good at all of those things, above average of all of those things, and the ability to run these kinds of routes that they are going to be running this season. And if he hits, if you have a fifth round receiver that hits, then you're just going to be ahead of the game, because we do not know all. I don't have it yet. We hope to get it. All of the percentages for how many hit in each round. We know the first round is about 50-50. And we know that after you get to the third round or beyond, I think it's something like 15%. So if a guy in the fifth round actually hits for you, that's fantastic. But you're certainly not counting on that. In this case, he'll come in, they'll see what he can do, and they will try to develop him. And what he needs to do is attach himself to the hip of the really good receivers that are already on this team and learn everything that he can from Amari and from Jerry Jeudy and from Elijah Moore. And if he can do that, you just never know what you might have found.
And maybe this is the guy, I always bring this up on the podcast, maybe this is the guy finally. I just feel like even if Kevin's not the one calling plays, and even with this new offense, Kevin has been looking to fill this like Percy Harvin shaped hole in his heart ever since he got here. And he's tried it with different guys, whether it's been Jakeem Grant or Elijah Moore, different guys of varying, you know, profiles. Somebody he can line up in the backfield and somebody he can just do a bunch of funky stuff with. And I don't know, maybe Jamari Thrash will finally be that guy for Kevin. But Ashley, I can at least see the vision, you know, and I see that the Twitter highlights, and obviously the Twitter highlights always look great, but I do see the vision with what Jamari Thrash could be in this offense, especially kind of working underneath those other three receivers.
Yeah, those choice routes are definitely, I'm really intrigued to see what that is going to look like. I do think, we talked about this earlier in the week, this idea of that takes some time to build chemistry and all that when you're running those. So I'm curious with Deshaun Watson, how that all is going to factor into this, how those might look. But it's another swing at the plate for them, I think, like you're saying, Dana, try to fill this role, because we know they've taken receivers every single year that Andrew Berry has been here. And they haven't really hit. I mean, I think the closest you can say, now, maybe you're not ready to declare anything about David Bell or Cedric Tillman yet, if you're a fan. I know, Dan, we talked about this at length last pod. But I do think the best guy out of the group that Andrew Berry has drafted wound up being Donovan Peoples-Jones. His time here kind of ended. I think a big part of Donovan being the best of that group is the fact you got him in the sixth round and he ended up being productive. But he's not here anymore. So I think it just goes back to this team is really good at drafting certain positions. I think we know they're amazing at drafting DBs for the most part. They've gotten pretty lucky drafting offensive linemen, for example. But there are a couple positions I think that we've looked at, D tackle being one and receiver being the other, that they have kind of struggled to bring rookies in and acclimate them really quickly and give them a large role quickly. Now, this year, I don't think that's required. But I am curious to see how he looks compared to the guys like David Bell or Cedric Tillman that at least I've gotten to watch in my first two drafts covering this regime. I'm really curious. It's just, to me, he's another swing at the plate for them at that position.
And he's got to play special teams. That's one thing. He already has said that. He knows that's something he's got to do. He's going to have to contribute on special teams. And whether that's coverage, whether that's return game, whatever it is, he's got to be a contributor on special teams, which, by the way, we're not going to turn this into a David Bell podcast, I promise. But as we are starting to separate guys out, David Bell has played 123 special team snaps his rookie year and 44 last year. So David might need to start playing a little more special teams, too, as we move forward. All right, this, speaking of special teams, this is a really fascinating pick for me. I think if I had to pick one guy out of this draft class that I just kind of see as an intriguing pick, it's actually this one at number 206. It's Nathaniel Watson. He's 6'2", 233 pounds, 6 years at Mississippi State. He was Martin Emerson's teammate there. I believe Martin Emerson actually arrived after Nathaniel did and then left before Nathaniel did. I got to double check that full timeline there. But played at Mississippi State for 6 years. This is I don't know. So Mary Kay, I look at this and I think any linebacker in a Jim Schwartz scheme, if you can play downhill, if you can be disruptive, you're going to find a role. But then there's also this idea of the Browns looking for guys that fit this new kickoff rule. And they've kind of admitted nobody really knows what they're getting into here, but they think they have an idea of what you need. And so I just think on those levels, this is a really interesting pick of a player, an older player, but just a guy that if you put him in Jim Schwartz's scheme and he can play downhill, and Lance Reisland sent us some scouting reports on these guys, and his first two bullet points are he plays with his hair on fire and plays angry and with an edge, and plays best coming downhill in A and B gaps, relentless. That sounds like a Jim Schwartz linebacker to me, and that sounds like a Bubba Ventrone special teamer to me.
Yeah, in fact, if you look back over his history, there have even been times in practice where things have gotten a little bit heated and he's kind of crossed over the line a little bit. So, you know, we'll have to keep an eye on some of that and make sure that he's kind of playing within himself in this system. But I'm sure he will be. When you've got Jim Schwartz and some of these really strong coaches that they're going to have around, he will fall into line. There's no question about that. But I agree with you 100% about the special teams. Again, nobody knows exactly what type of player they're going to need yet. No, I don't even know if they will know until next year exactly what everybody's going to be looking for and how they're going to be playing these new kickoffs. Because when you're doing them up in the NFL, you've got the best and brightest minds in football up here trying to figure out how to gain an edge in these situations. So you're going to have the Bubba Ventrones and all these amazing special teams coordinators trying to get super creative and figure out exactly how to maximize their scoring ability and their potential and their field position ability on these kickoff returns. And it's going to be fun. These guys have new life breathed into them. It's the kickoff is back. It's going to be fun. And nobody knows what kind of defensive guys are you going to need on coverage. Nobody really quite gets that yet. But the Browns do think that Nathaniel Watson is going to fit the bill somehow in that regard. We'll see how that goes. On defense, he is sort of the replacement for Sione Takitaki. He's a Mike linebacker. He's extremely smart. He can call the defense at some point when it gets to that point, and he's in there a lot more. And he is just that stout sort of run defender kind of guy. And he's got a lot of football under his belt. And so maybe the moment won't be too big for him, and we will be able to get some of those Mike reps early on. And that's basically what's going to be required of him. I thought Sione was the best Mike linebacker. I mean, he was their best run defender amongst linebackers for the last couple of years. He got really, really good at that. The lights came on, and he was just that solid blue-collar, lunch-pail, run-stopping linebacker. And that's kind of what they're going to need Nathaniel to do.
Ashley, 16 sacks combined the last 2 years. So, I mean, this is a guy that has sack production. And again, just, I don't know. I just think this is a really intriguing pick. And, bringing up Takitaki is interesting, too, because it took Takitaki a couple of years, I think, to really become. I mean, I think it was the year he tore his ACL when he was starting to emerge as that Mike linebacker. He replaced Anthony Walker. And I was like, okay, there's something here with he's kind of figuring it out. Like you said, Mary Kay, the lights went on for him. So it might take Watson a little time, but I could see him working. I think he's going to be a useful player for this team this year, initially on special teams and then maybe on defense as the year goes on.
Yeah, I think that is in part to me the good thing about this system for linebackers is I do think you kind of have a bit more leeway with them almost to give them some time to acclimate because we know what the system requires. They're essentially on cleanup duty. It's important to, as we've been saying, play downhill. But there's a lot of times where Jim Schwartz will only use two linebackers out there, right? So we know they brought Jordan Hicks in. That's a veteran. They brought Devin Bush in. You're kind of taking almost a free agency type of flyer on him at this point in his career. He's trying to turn some things around. So they have some depth there, but I think that does give Nathaniel Watson a bit of a ramp up period, so to speak. There's the popular training camp phrase, the ramp up. But to get acclimated to what it's like to play in the NFL, I do think, too, knowing the Browns and knowing Andrew Berry, they do just really seem to love these guys who especially played in the SEC and were productive defenders, and that's what he was. Now, I do think for him, learning how to be a pro is also going to be a thing. We know that there were a couple of arrests that he dealt with when he was in college, the suspected DUI arrest and then the drag racing one, Dan, which I know we talked about over the weekend. And I think that's going to be an element to him kind of learning the ropes of being a pro, and they'll have to watch out for that. But production-wise on the field, he's definitely really intriguing with his size as well.
All right, let's move on to the last two picks here. And again, just God bless Lance Reisland for sending us these scouting reports. He's the best. He's already spent a bunch of time watching South Dakota State football. Myles Harden, the number 227 pick, 5'11", 195. Mary Kay, you've mentioned it. This team loves to draft cornerbacks. And for Myles, if I'm a seventh-round corner and I'm looking at the places I could go, I think Cleveland's a pretty good place because I get to learn from some pretty good guys in front of me. There maybe isn't the pressure to get on the field right away. And yeah, I got a good defensive coordinator, good secondary staff, good special teams coordinator. If I'm a seventh round pick playing corner, I like going to Cleveland right now. I think it's a good place to be. And so we'll just sort of see what he can bring here. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but, you know, Jim Schwartz will find a role for you if you deserve it. That's something Myles Harden can bank on.
Right. They love their cornerbacks here. We know that. And now he has an opportunity to step into a room where he can learn from the likes of Denzel Ward. He can learn from Martin Emerson. He can learn from Greg Newsome. So he can learn both inside and outside spots, although he might be a little bit more suited to a nickel role. So maybe he can sort of attach himself to the hip of a Greg Newsome type of guy. He's also got Cam Mitchell, who learned a lot in his first season and got some good reps and some good playing time. So they are not afraid to throw a young rookie into the lineup, even if they're not a third round pick or a second round pick or a first round pick. So if you have the traits and you've got the speed and you've got the ability to do what they need you to do, they won't be afraid to play you. And of course, he's going to also have to play special teams, and that will be very key. So he's got to prove that he's ready, willing, and able to do that. And if he can do that, then he's going to make the 53, because they like to give these guys a chance and they don't want to lose them right away. They don't want to draft these guys to develop them, and then they don't get the opportunity to do that. So I actually think the rules should be somehow a little bit different for developmental players, where you don't have to worry about losing them. There should be some other way to go about this, where you can have your sort of practice squad without having to expose the player to waivers and all those kinds of things. And then before you know it, he's gone just because it was hard to manage your roster. So they need to work on that. That's my shout out for that. I also think, while I'm at it, I mean, why not have more than 53 players on the final roster? I mean, give them two or three more players. It's always so hard to get down to 53. Why should it have to be so hard? It doesn't need to be that hard. Add two or three more players.
I've always wondered that. I wonder if that's partially like an NFLPA thing, though, too, because they don't want guys to get stashed. You know, if you have 60 spots, that means like a good player could get stashed somewhere and not get to play. I don't know. They should have like a redshirt year.
Option. Yes.
Like if you're like a day three pick or something, that a team can redshirt you, but they aren't allowed to play you. I don't know.
I know.
We're just coming up with it. We need to have a rules podcast.
Right. I mean, even two more would seem to help. It's always like, you know, you just have to, you know, wring your hands over those last two guys. And do you keep a quarterback or do you not? Why does it have to be that hard? Why does it have to be that hard? It doesn't have to be that hard. Give them three more guys each and call it a day. But anyways, I digress. So I do think that, you know, he's got a chance to make the roster. I think every one of these guys has a chance to make the roster because they are their new draft class and they're not going to want to see them walk out the door right away. So he'll have a shot. And again, really good guys to learn the game from.
And Ashley, it seems like he's got the traits to be successful. And, you know, one of the things that Lance says, the very first bullet point is just a good player. So, you know, sometimes that's what it comes down to. Like all the traits, all the measurables, all that stuff. Can you just get on the field and play football and perform?
Yeah, I also think an interesting note he had along with his competitiveness that he's pretty good against the run. I think that's pretty promising. And, you know, I know some people might look at him and think, oh, he didn't go to an FBS school. How good could he be really? It sounds like he had some interest from all the research we did on Saturday when they drafted him. He had FBS interest. He just decided in what is not the norm in college football these days to not transfer. He felt some kind of loyalty here to South Dakota and didn't want to leave. So I do think just because he is in the FCS as opposed to the FBS that necessarily don't put too much stock in that as a fan, because we know this team is good at drafting corners and seeing those traits in guys. So I'll be really interested to see what happens to him. I mean, obviously it's a crowded position room, but if they think he has something there, I'm sure they're going to try to stick him around, because what's the motto Andrew Berry keeps throwing out at us? You can never have enough good corners.
Yeah, and that's a spot where I think they would keep extra guys over some other positions. So our last one here, interesting guy, Jawan Briggs. He's a singer. He's a father. He's got, three kids? Yeah,
three kids.
He turns 24 in September. So he's married and has three children already. He was a member of Bruce Feldman's Freaks list. Dane Brugler had him as a seventh round or priority free agent. So the Browns get him in just about the right spot here. Mary Kay, you never know with any seventh round pick, because this is the area where you're getting into like borderline should you have even been drafted. But when you look more into this guy, you can see why Andrew Berry drafted him. The athletics, the freakishness, he runs like a 5.03 40 at 297 pounds. So this is what Andrew does. He had the extra seventh round pick. He takes advantage of it and just takes a guy who's an athletic freak and, you know, let's get him on the field and see if he can find a spot.
Yeah, he's another movement guy. He's another defensive tackle that can move really, really well. He has limited experience for the most part in terms of rushing the passer. But when you have the speed and the explosiveness and the ability to do so, and then you get asked to do so, then chances are you might show something at the next level that you didn't have an opportunity to show. But he's definitely a high energy guy, a high motor guy, great character guy. Everybody loves him. I'm hearing that when he gets in the building, he's going to be somebody that we're going to be excited to talk to, because he's just that kind of personality. So that's good. I think sometimes when you are roster building, you have to take into consideration the energy, the vibe, and the culture of your locker room. Of course, you always have to take that into consideration. But this is one of those where just the personality and the energy alone might push you over the top ahead of somebody else, because you're going to bring so much to the table from that standpoint. So I think he's going to be somebody also that they probably will try to get him on the roster if they can. It's not going to be easy. These last two guys, they could have waited and tried to sign them in free agency, but you know, the chances are that you might lose them. So why not grab them with these seventh round picks where you're just kind of taking flyers on a guy anyways?
And, you know, I was thinking about this while Mary Kay was talking, Ashley, but a name we've already mentioned on this podcast is Shelby Harris, who they brought back. He's 32 years old. He's the veteran in that room. He was the 235th pick in the draft back in 2014. So he's another seventh rounder. He didn't get on the field right away. He played 8 games his first 2 seasons. He's talked about the value of being a field goal guy, right? Being able to block field goals or make plays in the field goal. Units. So having a guy like that in the room with you, who's kind of made the journey that you're trying to make, I think is going to be really valuable.
Yeah, I think last year you even heard the safeties talk a lot about that, right? Because Rodney McLeod started his career as an undrafted guy, and the Browns kept 2 younger undrafted guys, obviously Ronnie Hickman, who was a rookie last year, and DeAnthony Bell, who was only in his second year. So I know both of them have mentioned how valuable it was to have a veteran in their position group who knows the game so well, knows the league so well, and you can kind of look at him and say, well, he did it, so why can't I? And I think this is the exact kind of guy you take a flyer on in the seventh round. I pulled up the freaks list from Bruce Feldman from last year, and I mean, Jawan Briggs came in at 78. There's 101 guys on the list, and he said the reason he felt so strongly about putting him there was his strength. In high school, he squatted 700 pounds. In the 2023 offseason, he deadlifted 655 and did 31 reps on the bench press at 225. And I know back then he clocked some of his times. It was 4.89 seconds in the pro shuttle. He hit 18.6 miles per hour in that drill at the time. So that stuff alone is really intriguing. And I do just think he seems like an interesting guy. Even here, he listed off all the, along with singing, I guess he plays a ton of instruments. So they have listed piano, guitar, bass, drum, sax, flute, cello, violin, viola, and harmonica. That's 10 different instruments. Talk about a renaissance man. There's a couple guys on this team like that. I know Dalvin Tomlinson, really big into playing multiple instruments. Alex Wright, really big into music instruments. So I'm sure he's going to have some fast friends in this locker room too.
I don't want to like belittle him. Does harmonica really count?
Of course.
Yes. Yes. And Jason Kelsey and Travis Kelsey on their podcast just actually talked about this, which is why it's fresh in my mind, because famously, Jason Kelsey is also like an instrument savant. People here probably know that from his time in the Cleveland Heights Jazz Band. He talked about harmonica being really one of the more difficult things he tried to learn, and he never pulled it off.
All you have to do is Google images, Juwan Briggs. When I first saw a picture of him, before I knew he was on Bruce Feldman's freak list, I saw the guns on him right away, and I was like, whoa. For a defensive tackle, that is a little unusual. Sometimes we're asking them to mix in a salad every once in a while, but not so with Juwan Briggs. Just jacked. I mean, he is a workout warrior. I'm sure that he and Myles Garrett are going to bond over their weight room prowess and over their biceps. And yeah, it's uncanny when you look at you know, just how he's built.
Ashley, you mentioned how much he squatted, and my first thought was, like, it just reminded me of how much we've seen Nick Chubb squat. And Nick Chubb is not the size of Juwan Briggs.
Isn't that crazy?
And I mean, just Googling it, I knew there was one with 600, but there's another one with 675 pounds. So here's hoping Nick Chubb gets back and healthy, and that him and Juwan can have, like, a squat off or something.
Oh, I would love – that would be a great story. Please invite us into the room for that one, Browns.
It's just a reminder of how freakishly strong a guy like Nick Chubb is as well. Okay, there we go. All of the draft picks that the Browns made over the weekend here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Also become a Football Insider subscriber, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. And check us out on YouTube, Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com, and on Instagram, search Orange and Brown Talk. For Mary Kay and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.